So we good to go now?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it's time.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're here for our second case on our oral calendar this morning, which is A22-1134, Gregory Dennis Heisted versus Wendy Beth Hoff, formerly known as Wendy Beth Boggs. My name is Tracy Smith. I'm here with my colleagues, Judge Brian and Judge Kopacki. Counsel, we are recording this Zoom session, and an audio recording only will be posted later on our website. Each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And at the start of your principal arguments, if you could please state your name and the party you represent for the record, I'd appreciate it. And with that, counsel for appellant, we are ready for you. The clock is right there showing, and hopefully you can see that in your screen.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Dolan, representing the appellant in this case, Wendy Hoff. This is a custody and parenting time issue. It is probably easily characterized as a post-paternity action. The parties were never married. At the time of the action brought by the father, my client, Wendy Hoff, the mother, was the de facto custodian of the child. No orders existed regarding custody and parenting time. Temporary hearing was held in this matter on July 7th of 2021. In that temporary order, the court granted the parties temporary joint legal custody for a short period of time, awarded the father sole physical custody while the mother completed some jail time. Thereafter, the court's order restored the mother to physical custody, primary physical custody of the child, and created a parenting time schedule, which was in effect at the time this matter was tried. That parenting time schedule awarded father about 28.5% of the time, alternating weekends, Fridays through Monday mornings, and in the off week of Wednesday as an overnight. At trial, the court ultimately granted to the father sole physical custody, awarded to the parties joint legal custody pursuant to their agreement, and further directed that the mother would receive a parenting time schedule, which by our calculations affords her approximately 120 overnights, or about one third of the time. And this appeal by mother follows. So we clearly accept the difficult standard of review that we have in this case and acknowledge that the appellate's court role is fairly limited when reviewing the issues of balancing best interest factors as applied by the district court. That said, we are entitled to review, and as you all know, the appellate court reviews these custody determinations with a beach of discretion standard, and for our purposes, two ways in which a trial court breaches its own discretion is making findings unsupported by the evidence, or in the alternative, delivering a decision that is contrary to the facts and logic. And we suggest that's what's happened in this case. Just briefly responding to a couple of points made by the respondent here, the father, it is not our intention to argue that the only issue to be addressed or the only factor considered is primary residence or history and nature of care or willingness to provide care. That's not what we are suggesting, nor are we suggesting that this is tantamount to a change in physical custody requiring proof of endangerment or application of the Nice-Peterson standard. We're not suggesting that. We are, however, suggesting that the trial court must consider, and failed to do so, the lengthy period of custody and appropriate care that was provided by the mother in this matter. We also are suggesting that the trial court did in fact consider conduct of the parties which did not adversely affect the child. And finally, we are suggesting when the findings and conclusions are reviewed as a whole, there is a lack of connection or consistency between the conclusion and the actual findings and the facts that can be supported by the evidence in this case. So our first argument relates to this whole issue of history and nature of participation, as well as the willingness and ability to provide care. The court made findings on this on pages 11 through 13 of its findings of fact. Essentially, as we read those findings, what the trial court determined is that mother had provided more of the primary care for the child, that each of the parties was providing an appropriate household for the child, that appropriate care had been provided. But the trial court specifically finds, and I'm quoting, that the last 2 years, quote, raised significant concerns about whether the mother is providing a safe environment.
Could you give me the specific finding that would help to follow? Which one are you reading from?
Certainly, Your Honor. It would be finding on page 12, Roman numeral 13, and also Roman numeral 11. So within those findings and the other findings, essentially the court concedes that the mother had been a primary caregiver and perhaps had provided more care than the father on a historical basis, but focused on what the court perceived to be difficulties in the last 2 years of the party's relationship. In doing that, however, the court does not connect that to any factual findings relating to the child. The conclusion that the mother's environment raises concerns about safety is not supported by any findings associated with the child, that she expressed concern, that she's failing to attend school, that she isn't able to communicate with her biological father, that she has grooming or other care issues, that she's not receiving health care, any of the sort of things that relate to the history and nature of the party's participation in providing care for the child. I guess what I'm trying to say with regard to this particular finding is the court specifically finds that this finding favors father, even though all the facts as identified by the court, except this conclusory statement about concern of the safe environment, supports a determination that that factor should favor mother.
Yet could you tell me, I'm sorry, but when you refer to the safe environment, what are you referring to there? Can you point me in the order?
In the findings, the court indicated that it had concern about whether the past 2 years had raised concerns for the court regarding whether the mother could provide a safe environment. I'm looking
at... Okay, is that number 15, Romanette 15?
Yes, actually, okay. Paragraph 15 on page 13, the changes over the past 2 years, though, raised significant ongoing concerns about respondents' ability to provide safe living environment, free of hostility and animosity.
And why is that not, I assume then you're, I'm trying to follow your argument, and that's what I'm asking specifically. Are you arguing that these factual findings, the ones that you're talking about now, are clearly erroneous and unsupported by the record? That's what you are arguing, is that correct?
I'm arguing both, Your Honor, that they are unsupported by the evidence. And even if supported by the evidence, when balanced, it does not result in a determination that the father, that this factor would favor the father.
And so with respect to, let's look at number 15, I'm wondering, I think your argument is, notwithstanding that there was, you know, violence that the child was present for in the household, not involving her, that somehow there needed to be some sort of, I guess, expert testimony or perhaps other testimony about a negative impact on the child before a district court could conclude in a custody determination that violence in the household is a factor that, you know, folded within the various factors where here it's under history of care, it might also be somewhere else, that actually would favor one parent over the other. Well, I'm not sure I understand that argument. What more is needed? You seem to be demanding a lot of pain and suffering to the child for being around experiencing violence in a household before it can actually be considered to favor one parent.
First, Your Honor, the incidents that occurred that the court refers to did not actually occur within the residence, but I understand your point is broader. It's the household, regardless of where it is. However, to make a determination that these did, in fact, negatively impact or adversely affected the child, we would need to see some behavior in the child. It doesn't necessarily require expert testimony, but some indication that the item that the court expresses as a concern actually has adversely impacted the child in some way. There's no evidence presented.
Where did the court say that the child has been adversely affected?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed your question.
So you're saying to determine that the child has been adversely affected, there has to be evidence of that. Is there a finding by the district court that the child has been adversely affected?
There is a finding that the child has been adversely affected, but no facts that support that conclusory statement.
And where is that adversely affected finding?
A moment, if I can, Your Honor. Well, it's actually included here because the court does find historically that that's a concern. It also finds in its final determination and conclusions that based upon concerns in the mother's residence, as well as interaction with the stepfather, that these are have become insurmountable difficulties that create instability, safety issues within the mother's home. Is that responsive to your question, Your Honor?
I guess so. I think that you are reading this language where I don't see the court finding there's been an adverse effect. I see the court finding an environment for the child that does not, a safe living environment free of hostility and animosity. Those are two, they're not identical. I think you're reading it as there was a finding of adverse effect and that's unsupported by the record. And I don't exactly see that.
I think I'm suggesting something different, Your Honor. I'm suggesting that there is no finding by the court that there is an adverse effect or facts to demonstrate that there is.
And then, right. So you're arguing there has to be an adverse effect before it could be a factor that is considered.
That's correct, Your Honor, which goes to our second argument, the court considering a number of items that do not necessarily affect the outcome or safety of the child. And as the court knows, the case law clearly indicates that we can't consider factors that don't adversely affect the child's care.
So, Mr. Dolan, let me be very specific about this particular paragraph, since that's what we've been talking about. Are you saying that in this paragraph 15, the district court doesn't tie it to the child enough?
I'm suggesting that what the court does in its entire findings, not just this one, is make conclusory statements that, you know, domestic violence is bad, that that issues of parents going to jail are bad things. And then the court considers that based upon that, it grants custody issues with regard to that without demonstrating that there is some connection with those general statements. It would be better if you hadn't been convicted of assault to some adverse impact that actually occurred with regard to the child's care.
Okay, so again, on paragraph 15, is that an example of what you're saying, or is that an example of something that cuts the other way?
It's an example of what I'm saying.
And maybe you can walk me through how paragraph 15 is not tied to the child.
It's not tied to a factual determination that the child is adversely affected. It's a conclusory statement that as a result of instability in the home, that bad things have happened to the child. But yet there is no demonstration of facts to support instability in the home, other than a conclusion that because someone has been convicted of a crime or their spouse has been committed to the Commissioner of Corrections, that therefore that must impact on a child. And while a court can make a general conclusion about that and express concerns, we're suggesting that it has to be tied to this child and this circumstance to demonstrate an adverse circumstance occurring with regard to that child. And that's particularly important in this case when we have a significant history of the mother being a significant caretaker of the child and the child primarily living with mom through essentially her entire life until the time that this action was commenced. And so when the court consider those issues, they are appropriate for the court's consideration. We're simply suggesting that they need to be tied to some adverse impact on the child as opposed to just a general concept. These things are bad for kids.
And what authority would you point us to that in the context of an initial custody determination, not a modification, that an adverse impact of witnessing and experiencing or witnessing violence in the home has to be proved to have already adversely affected the child?
The cases that we cite in connection with our second issue associated with whether the court relied on items that the court should not have considered because they are not relevant to the care of the child. There are a number of cases there. The Brent case, for example, in which the Supreme Court affirmed a It's an old case, a three-court panel, a three-judge district court panel that had overturned a district court's decision. In Brent, the district court had made a decision that dad should get custody and had relied on some bad behavior by mom that the court felt demonstrated instability, some domestic problems. Ultimately, the three-judge panel and the Supreme Court concluded that the trial court's reliance on those incidents in that circumstance was unsupported because the mother was providing good care for the child. And then again in Lemke, the court specifically indicates that we're not going to sacrifice bad interest or best interest factors associated with children to punish parents for what is misguided sort of information. And then finally, in that same string of cases, Your Honor, I think it's the Thornton case specifically talks about the domestic violence issue, and the Stencil case specifically talks about adverse impact in connection with third parties like step-parents, new husbands, boyfriends, and the like. I see I'm out of time, so unless there are other questions.
May I, Judge Smith? Or
of course, yeah. Okay.
It's the argument that you're making that there aren't factual findings to tie this to an actual harm or actual adverse impact. That's an argument that the district court didn't make findings that it needed to make. And I, as I look at the docket, I don't see a motion for amended findings. Am I correct that there was no motion for amended findings?
You are correct. There's no motion for amended findings, Your Honor.
And there's case law from our court that says in circumstances like that, where the remedy is essentially remanding for further findings, but there was no motion for amended findings, that remedy has been forfeited. What is your response to why we shouldn't follow that case law here?
I guess my argument would be, Your Honor, because our request for relief is broader than simply saying that the determination by the court to connect those two is error. What I am suggesting is if the court failed to make those findings and failed to make that connection and failed to give credit to the mother where credit was due about good things that she had, and the court had failed to consider or had improperly considered facts that it should not have considered in reaching its resolution, that warrants remand despite failing to ask for amended findings.
Okay. Mr. Dolan, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And counsel for the respondent, you have 15 minutes.
Good morning. Matthew Francis, attorney for Gregory Heisted, the respondent in this matter. I'll tell your honors up front, if you noticed me looking off to my right, I'm doing that because I have a second monitor that's up here with all my notes and everything. So not trying to be rude. I, of course, stand in opposition to the appeal request, trying to focus on the questions and the argument that was being made this morning. I will point the court to paragraph 55D, page 10, with respect to the court's findings of fact, with the district court's findings of fact, with respect to domestic violence in the household. When the court looks at paragraph 9, the judge Churchwell said that the history of violence within and around the care respondent's care and custody of the child over the past 2 years is very concerning to the court. The court disagrees with respondent's characterization that the incidents have had no impact on the child. The child witnessed Hoff was the appellant's husband, violent encounter with his children, was present during the appellant's assault on her sister, and is aware of the fact that her stepfather is in prison for assault. It is well accepted that a child's increased exposure to violence and family conflict is highly likely to impact a child's well-being and emotional development. Now, the court made a finding that this factor about domestic violence in a household favored my client, as it did on 9 of the 12 factors, and the other 3 factors it made a finding that, in fact, that favored neither party. But here, what the court is looking at is there's domestic violence in the appellant's home, whereas there's none in the respondent's home. I don't think we need to have an expert witness. I think most trial courts understand what happens when two children emotionally, when they are experienced to or subject to experiencing domestic violence, even though it's not predicated upon them or toward them. And I think that's where judge is making his finding. Overall, Judge Churchwell seemed to be making two is overall finding in favor of my client awarding custody to my client was premised on the fact that my client can provide the more stable household based upon the fact of the last couple of years. I mean, as the court's aware, this is initial determination in custody. You're looking at both parties' behavior and the parenting that they've done to both children over the last 2 years, and the court has to pick one. And so the court here looked at the two factors here, as Mr. Dolan was talking about, and as I've talked about in my brief, he looked at what was going on as far as the violence in the home, and not only the violence in the home, but the respondent's testimony to it at trial. The district court was very concerned about her apparently trying to downplay these events and downplay the effect that it had on the child, downplay the relationship or the experience that the minor child must have been feeling and how it could play out in the future. And then thereby demonstrated in the court's eyes an inability to properly be able to ensure that the child grew up in a stable, violent-free home in the future. Secondly, the district court was focused on the relationship between the stepfather and my client. There's repeated findings of fact and testimony at trial that the stepfather was making things very difficult between my client's ability to have parenting time with his child. The district court found that the appellant did not take adequate steps to try to preserve that relationship and try to stop the stepfather from interfering. And that was another main factor that the court focused on. So I think that lack of stability, the primary focus of my client being able to provide the better stable household, was primary factor here for the court and is well documented in the district court's findings of fact. I also note that Mr. Dolan had made argument about the four cases. I refute all four of those cases on pages 16 and 17 of my brief. I won't go into that today unless the court has a question for me. I will also note, Dolan, that as I noted in my brief, that in the case of Suture versus Suture from 1987, this court had said that if the person's residing with a parent exposed a child to, quote, less than exemplary behavior, the parent may be deemed unfit to have custody. Further, in Williams versus Carlson and Vagnus, in Williams versus Carlson, a 2005 case, and the Vagnus decision from 2000, this court specifically stated that a parent who can provide better stability in a home can be a deciding factor in custody determinations. And that's what the court did here. So, I'm not hearing any questions. I hate to repeat myself or say things that your honors are already aware of. So unless the court has any questions for me, I'll end my argument at this time.
Great. Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Francis. counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. Just a couple of brief responses. First of all, with regard to the court's determination that Mr. Hoff had interfered with parenting time, the court should remember that there was no order for custody or parenting time in this case until the action was commenced. My client had de facto custody of the child, and there's no order for parenting time. On July 7th, the court established an order for custody and parenting time, and there was no evidence presented to the trial court, because none existed, that there had been any violations of that order, any failure of the father to receive the scheduled time which he was entitled to, or any information that had been provided to the court that after that temporary order was issued, that there was any interference by my client or by Mr. Hoff in the parenting time schedule or interactions between father and the child. And so when the court made findings about the difficulties that it had identified, again, it did not consider the record with regard to what had been presented about information about the party's behaviors after a temporary order for parenting time had existed. You all know how difficult it is for people in family law matters and why we have orders in the first place. We have orders in the first place because people don't get along and they need an order to help their behavior. That's what happened in this case. And when the court issued that order, and I might point out, it's a schedule of time that was recommended and suggested by my client and adopted by the trial court at the time of the temporary hearing. That is inconsistent with the court's ultimate determination and conclusion that my client interferes with the parenting time or allows her current husband to do so. We are suggesting that when you look at these findings in the broadest way, that it is clear that the court did not like Mr. Hoff. It is also clear from the findings and the trial itself that the respondent father did not like Mr. Hoff. But it is also clear that this child has been well cared for her entire life, that there are no facts to support a determination that she's currently being harmed or not having any of her needs provided for. And the court's failure, just again, to simply give credit where credit's due, we suggest demonstrates a lack of exercise of sound discretion. Unless you have questions, that's all I have.
Remind me, I was just looking, at what age did the parties separate, cease living together?
At what date did they separate, Your Honor?
Or what age of the child?
Oh, she would have been roughly 7 years old, could have been six and a half, but in that 6.5 to 7 year range, Your Honor.
Okay, so both parents are present up until she was about 6.5, 7, living together.
Well, yes, that they resided from time to time together. The facts are in dispute a little bit about that, Your Honor. But yes, they and who provided care during that time frame is obviously one of the factual issues. But yes, you are correct.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any questions from my panel members. So I thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out within the statutory time period.